word into the sentence or one word from the end of the sentence when it occurs. When you read a sentence with a comma, you take a pause from continuing on with the second part of the sentence. The comma in our sermon series represents a specific season with God, a divine pause from life spent with God. It's a season you intentionally put God first in everything. Today's message is all about the conjunction comma. Conjunction comma. To really understand this, it's the middle part of a sentence that divides two complete thoughts. That's what a conjunction does. It brings two complete thoughts together to make one big sentence, from my understanding. The key focus this week, we're looking at Jacob's life. Jacob illustratively plays just a divine conjunction. The first part of his life, it was pretty rocky. It was very rough. He started off stealing things, lying about things, and running away, and then ended his life as a father of many nations. He had children that lasted and outlasted, and his inheritance and his name still lasts today. It's still a city because of what his conjunction represented. So I want to look at the first part of his life, the end part of his life, and how he got from here to there. So I think that's a key takeaway. How do we get from where we're at to where God is calling us to be at? Sometimes we can get lost in the middle. We can get lost in the fray, get lost in the weeds, if you will. Genesis chapter 27, verse 21 through 27. This is a story of Jacob with his father, Isaac. So when he swoops in and steals his older brother's inheritance. Has anyone ever dealt with inheritance in your own family? Someone passes away? Is there a very pleasant experience all around? No, never. Never. It's just awkward. It's uncomfortable. You're mourning someone. It's just not good. Then Isaac, who's the father of Jacob, Isaac had two sons, Esau and Jacob. Esau was the older son, the beloved son, the one that Isaac really liked and wanted to pass off his inheritance to. You got to understand the inheritance isn't just a pile of money, but it's also God's blessing as the firstborn. Do you remember when God called Abraham and said, "You're going to be a father of many nations"? Do you remember when that happened? That's the inheritance that's being passed down. Abraham to Isaac, and now Isaac to Esau. But Jacob says, no, I want to be that lineage. I want the divine right of being a father of many nations to pass through me, not my older brother. So he swoops in. Isaac is really losing he's old. He can't really see anymore. And Jacob comes up with this plan with his mom, because he's a mama's boy, to swoop in and steal it. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come closer so I can touch you and make sure that you are really Esau." So Jacob went closer to his father, and Isaac touched him. "The voice is Jacob's, but the hands are Esau's," Isaac said, because he had taken a goat's skin and glued it onto his arm, so it felt rough and jagged and hairy. It got real in the Old Testament, okay? But he did not recognize Jacob, because Jacob's hands felt hairy just like Esau's. So Isaac prepared to bless Jacob. "But are you really my son Esau?" He's like, "I still don't believe you. You kind of feel like a goat right now." He asked, "Yes, I am," Jacob replied. Then Isaac said, "Now, my son, bring me the wild game." Because he sent him out to go kill his favorite type of food and prepare it as a soup. "Let me eat of it, and then I will give you my blessing." So Jacob took the food to his father, which his mother prepared, by the way, and Isaac ate it. He also drank the wine that Jacob served him. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come a little closer and kiss me, my son." So Jacob went over and kissed him. And when Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he was finally convinced. And he blessed his son. He said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the outdoors, which the Lord has blessed." Jacob's kind of off to a rocky start. Point number one, rocky start. Jacob really intrigues me in the Bible. He's one of the characters that kind of stands out as a character you hate to love or you love to hate. I don't know which one's correct, but he's just the guy you're like, ugh, you really did that. Such a snake. He just slithered on in and just stole all that wasn't his because he wanted it? He has a rocky start. But my favorite aspect of Jacob is Jacob, it's humanity. In the Bible, he represents humanity. We all start off in sin, living in sin, conniving, wrongdoing, whatever hot mess you've done. That's how Jacob is. He represents us in every aspect. A, why was he off to a rocky start? He lied about his identity. He pretended that he was his older brother. He lied about his identity. It's really key to take note of this. Because in humanity, all of us, unintentionally or intentionally, have lied about our identities before we are saved. Oh, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Actually, you're who God has called you to be. You might not know it yet, and you're lying about it. But you don't know you're lying about it. It's okay, we'll get there. Lied about his identity. B, he stole inheritance. Can you imagine that playing out today? Like you show up to the lawyer's office and you're like, no, really, I show up and I'm like, no, really, I'm Pat Russell. The lawyer's like, I have no way of proving it to you. It's like, yeah, look, I photoshopped my license. You know, it would be so awkward. He stole inheritance. Stole inheritance. Remember, he represents humanity. Before we are saved, our inheritance has been stolen away because we're living in sin. We have the inheritance of heaven, inheritance of prosperity, inheritance of everything, of healing, of everything that God has to offer. And it doesn't belong to us yet because it's been stolen. The inheritance is stolen. And C, ran away. This is a rocky start. Shortly after this, Jacob, I encourage you to go back and read Genesis chapter 27. I can't dive into all of it today. But shortly after this, Esau finds out. And Esau says, oh, I'm going to kill you now. And so Jacob says, nah, I'm good. And he runs away. Because he likes to avoid things that make him feel uncomfortable. We all have these rocky starts because it's easy to avoid what makes us feel uncomfortable. Oh, I don't like that. It makes me feel weird. I don't like when you say that from the pulpit. Ugh, that goes against my spirit. Well, because it's the word of God, and sometimes that pierces us, and it's far easier to run away than allow God to deal with us in our hearts. He's off to a rocky start. So how does this guy transform into who he is, delivering Abraham's promise from God to all of humanity through all of time? Because I wouldn't trust this guy. There's no way. There's no way I trust this guy with my family or my friends or anyone from church. And yet God has the audacity to trust him with bringing about the Abrahamic promise to all of humanity for all of time. God's a better person than I am, I'm for sure. Number two, righteous ending. I want to jump to the end. The difference between his rocky start and his righteous ending, everything has been tweaked a little bit in his life. A, he no longer lies about his identity, but he tells his identity. Tells identity. He is just loving today. See, Jacob, in his life, started Jacob, and God renamed him Israel. The city, or the land of Israel, still exists today because of Jacob listening to God and changing. I think it's really interesting to take note. Jacob started by stealing identity, lying about identity, and in a moment with God, gave people identity. How many people come from Israel? Like 50, 100 people? A lot, okay? A lot. It's been around for over 3,200 years. There's a lot of generations that have passed through Israel. All those people, Jacob, who became Israel, handed that identity to them. B, gives inheritance. Earlier, he was stealing inheritance, and now he's giving inheritance. He was all about trying to steal what he thought belonged to him, and in the end of his life, he was passing it along to all his ancestors. He was no longer after what he could get, but what he could give. That's what happens when we have a divine moment with God. We get transformed from what I get out of this to what do I get to give out of this. Righteous ending, and C stands firm. He no longer ran away. He no longer could run. He no longer could avoid and get away from whatever he wanted to get away from. When the enemy attacked, he had to stand firm because he could no longer run. Do you know in the moment he spent with God, God disabled his ability to run physically? We're going to get to that in a moment, but Jacob sat down and wrestled with God, and it's such a weird encounter. So bizarre. It says, Jacob wrestled with God and toiled with him over the night, and at the end, God touched his hip, and he was no longer able to run. Old Testament stories are bizarre. Okay, we all get it. But what was happening physically was what God was doing spiritually over his life. He's saying, you no longer get to run away from your problems. You will face them because I'll be with you. You'll no longer hide from what you want to hide from, but I will be with you in all areas. So, a conjunction only works with two ideas are connected by a middle conjunction. There's two complete ideas. Jacob's life had a rocky start and a great ending. They're connected by a conjunction comma, if you will. It's a story of when Jacob wrestled with God. Jacob, I don't know why I put Jacob 32. That should be Genesis 32. Is that on the screen for the next verse? Yep. Okay. I was like, Jacob 32? Threw me off. Genesis chapter 32, 22 to 32 says this. Jacob got up in the middle of the night and took his wives, his 11 children, and everything he owned across to the other side of the Jabbok River for safety. Let me put a pin in that for a moment. This is the first time Jacob is going back to see his brother Esau. Jacob was up to shenanigans again in the land he was at, messed up again, and now he's running from it. And he's like, well, it might be better if I try to fix things over with my brother rather than to stay here and die anyways. So he's in the middle, and he's heading over, and he comes up with this another scheme because that's Jacob. Just what he is. He's like, maybe, okay, I have to go see Esau. He's still bitter. I get it. But maybe if I send my wife first, and he has multiple wives, okay, we just don't have time to get into that. I'll just say wife. Sends his wife first and his children and all his possessions that he could round up while he fled again. Send them first so Esau could see them. And then I'll know if he's going to kill them, then I got to figure out something else to do. Okay, this is where Jacob's at, okay? Sounds silly, but can we be honest? We've all been there in one way or another, trying to manipulate things on this earth to form our own will because we're scared of what the outcome will be. In reality, we need to spend time with God. So Jacob starts sending everyone else across the river to go meet his brother Esau, who has amassed a little army, by the way, and is waiting for them on the other side. So Jacob sends them, and then it says, verse 24, afterwards, Jacob went back and spent the rest of the night alone. He didn't go with them. He is the biggest coward. So he walked them all across. He's like, I'll be back in the morning. See you later. Heads back. He's alone. It says, a man came and fought with Jacob until just before daybreak. When the man saw that he could not win, he struck Jacob on the hip and threw it out of joint. They kept on wrestling until the man said, let go of me. It's almost daylight. The wisest thing Jacob has ever let come out of his mouth up to this moment was, you can't go until you bless me. You can't go until you bless me. Can't go till you bless me. Then the man asked, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. The man said, your name will no longer be Jacob. You have wrestled with God and with men, and you have won. That's why your name will be Israel. Jacob said, now tell me your name. Don't you know who I am? He asked, and he blessed Jacob. Jacob said, I have seen God face to face, and I'm still alive. So he named the place Peniel. The sun was coming up as Jacob was leaving Peniel. He was limping because he had been struck on the hip, and his muscles on his hip joint had been injured. You can't go until you bless me. What if we had that attitude with God? Just every morning. God, I can't leave your presence till you bless me. I can't leave your presence till you speak to me. I can't leave your presence till you say something that will get me through this day. You can't leave, God, till you bless me. You can't leave. I had this friend in college, and It was really interesting to see his life. Our college, it was a Bible college, but it went through a time where they wanted a basketball team really bad so they could play all the other little colleges around and bring in more academics and bring in more students. It was kind of a way to get more people to go to the college. And in doing so, they offered full ride scholarships to basketball players. Not all the basketball players wanted to be pastors, let alone be Christians. But it was a good way to get a college education for free that was fully accredited. So it's kind of like the second tier basketball players. Not that they're second tier if you're listening to this podcast by any means. But I remember one of the basketball players came through, and I really liked him. I thought he was the coolest guy. We hung out a little bit, and he was living his life in Bible college, doing a lot of extracurricular things that you aren't supposed to be doing in Bible college. And after about a year passed by, the next year came and we had a new dean of students, and he saw the shenanigans that were happening within the basketball team. He said, you know what? Thank you for your time here at the Bible college. If you'd like to stay on and become a pastor, you're more than welcome to. If not, we were phasing out the basketball program completely. Boom, axed, gone. He was out. A few years later, he came back to college, and I was like, what are you doing here? Like, I thought, is there basketball again? You know, I just had the association with basketball. You're playing basketball again? He's like, no, I'm called to be a pastor. Almost like lost. I was like, what? What just happened? And so I went out to coffee with him. I'm like, okay, I gotta ask, what's happened in the 2 years that you've been gone, because you're not the same person whatsoever? Like, there was a little extra than salvation going on in your life. Like, what happened, and what did you do? And he's like, I got to a point that was just pretty low. And I woke up one day and I had a journal that they had given me through Bible college. And I sat there and I said, God, I'm not going to close this until you speak to me. I can't let you go, God, until you speak to me. And so I sat there and sat there. The first day, I was there for 3 hours sitting, staring at a journal, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And I felt God speak to me, and I wrote it down. And then I opened up my Bible and then start my devotions. And I write down what I got. And he goes, I dedicated myself for 30 days to see if I could do this for 30 days to hear from God every single day. And I wasn't going to quit until I did. And so the second day, he goes, I got there and I opened up my journal and I just waited and waited and listened. I prayed and then listened and listened. And then I heard God, and it was a little bit shorter of amount of time. And the next day, it was a little bit shorter. The next day, because I didn't leave one single day until after 30 days, I heard from God every single day. The last day, he goes, I had such attuned myself to hearing the voice of God that before I even opened, he was already speaking. And I was just writing everything he was saying to me. I was like, wow. I was like, so what now? What are you doing? He goes, I do that every day. I haven't quit. 30 days was what my goal was, but how could I not go back to keep doing that? And so it's really neat to see. I see him on Facebook all the time. He's still pastoring. He's one of the few that just keep going. Jacob, one of the best things he could do, you can't go until you bless me. What if we had that heart? What if we had that heart for God every time we spent time with him? You can't go till I hear from you. You can't go till you bless me. The third point is wrestling middle. Wrestling middle. We had a rocky start, we had a righteous ending, but in the middle, we have a wrestling middle. Wrestling middle. It is so important that we wrestle with God. It is so critical. It is so important. Jacob could not become Israel without wrestling with God. Israel could not exist on this planet. However many people have been born and raised and died there, God's chosen people could not have existed on this planet without this man wrestling with God and saying, I can't let you go till I hear from you and you bless me. What defined Jacob was God. He defined Jacob. It wasn't his past, it wasn't his sin, it wasn't his lying about who he was to his father, it wasn't all the junk he went through. It was God who defined who he was. When God said, you're no longer your past. You're no longer your past. All the negative association with your name, from your parents, from your brother, from everything else, no longer defines you. What defines you is me. And God spoke to him. So how do we wrestle with God? And that's really the whole premise of the sermon series, is finding our comma, finding our conjunction, finding that moment where we take a break from life and spend time with God. It's an intentional season. For my college friend, some of you guys know him. I don't want to say his name. For my college friend, he went through a season. Went through a season where he thought it was going to be 30 days. He put an end date on it, and he really has never let up on that 30 days. It's an intentional season. A comma is an intentional pause from life to spend time with God. So the first aspect of that is A, be alone. In the sense that there's no distractions, nothing in your mind but trying to seek after God. I'm guilty of this. Have you ever spent time with God and you're like, you go to sit down and you're like, okay, I'm going to listen to you, God. I'm going to just whatever you want to say to me, it's going to be so good. I'm going to write it down. I got to remember, I got to get eggs and milk from the grocery store, but whatever you say, God's going to be good. And then I got to, my daughter, I got to go pick her up here. And then God just speak to me. And it's like, we're battling between a laundry list and hearing the voice of God. The trick, the secret of it all is be alone. Be alone. Jacob's dumb luck found the secret. He, can I say stupid in church? I don't know. How stupid he was, he lucked out big time. He sent everyone away, everyone who's worried and anxious. Do you know what happens when one person who's anxious is around you? You start feeling anxious. You know what I mean? He had his entire family. He had multiple wives going on. Every one of them were like anxious. He sent them forward stupidly, okay? But out of dumb luck, he found himself fully alone with God. That's a key secret. Be alone with God. No distractions, nothing to pull you away. Don't allow the enemy to try to get into your mind in those moments. B, he was alone with God, but he was also changed. Be changed. Be transformed. Be ready for God to speak to you, but then be ready to be different from it. You will have a choice from when you spend time with God to go back to the way things are or to be different. It's your choice. It's your choice. I remember when I got saved. Do you guys remember those moments when you got saved? I went through this crazy salvation up at a summer camp. And it was back in the good old days when you were like locked in for 7 days. Long camps. They were long camps. You thought like the world was ending. You were there forever. I remember my mom, I talked about this and she denied it. She, straight to my face, lied to me because she has a different memory of what happened at that summer camp than I. And I know what happened. I remember my mom dropped me off at my summer camp. And I didn't know I was getting dropped off at my summer camp, but she knew. She just dropped me off and said, "There's a pastor. You should go talk to him. I'll see you later. Pick you up in 7 days." I was like, "That's a thing?" No joke. That's what happened to me. I thought I was kidnapped. I thought I was gone forever. And I remember God spoke to me at that camp. I remember my salvation. I was sitting there up. You know, we had, you know, services that last 17 hours straight. They go on forever to a kid's mind. And you're sitting there forever. And you're sitting there like, "Come on." And then one night, I think they did an altar call every night. And I'm like, "What is this joke? Why are people running to the front? They're crying. That guy's crying. That kid just beat me up at tug of war. Why are they crying now?" And we're like, one night, it goes through. And I was sitting there. And the pastor said, if you want to accept God into your heart, you know, come up now. And he did every single night. You know, make sure you get everyone. And we're sitting there. And I was like, in my mind, right? Because you don't know if it's real yet. It's like in my mind. "Well, God, if you are real, you know I will not go up there. You send someone here and I'll give my life. Whatever you want, God, you send someone to me." And before I finished talking, a guy came up and said, "Hey, God told me to come talk to you. Do you want to be saved?" And I was like, "Are you listening to my thoughts, God? you might be real. I'll get saved right now." And so I remember the kid prayed with me, and it was just another camper. It was just another kid who accepted Jesus the night before. And so he prayed with me, and then the rest of the camp, I avoided him because I was like, "I don't know if he knows magic. I don't know if he knows kung fu. I don't know what's happening with that kid. I'm going to avoid this kid. I got Jesus. I don't know what else." I'm serious. I was scared that kid had like a direct channel with God. It's like, he knows my history, my past, everything. And I remember at that camp, God kept working every single moment. I was being changed and refined. And I got saved, and it was like I went through another 2 days of discipleship of how to live out my life. And where my parents picked me up, and I went to go hug my parents, and I said I love them, which is rare because I had to hug my dad for probably 5 years before that. And I said I love them. They're like, "Sending all the kids to this camp." And we're going home, and school started up a couple weeks later, and I was sitting up, you know, you sit with your group of friends and you're, you know, status quo. You talk about the summer, things going on. All the guys talking about guy stuff. And I was sitting there and I was like, "I don't need to talk about guy stuff. I want to talk about Jesus." In my head, I was just like, "I'm just going to stay quiet because no one knows I found Jesus." So I was like sitting there all quiet. And at one point, one guy's like, "Hey, you didn't talk about your parties and what you did and blah, 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 like everyone else." And they're like, "What'd you do over summer?" And I was like, "Well, actually, I went to a camp and I love God now. And I don't do that stuff that you're talking about." And everyone's like, no one knew how to react, right? So everyone just got quiet the rest of the lunch. They left. I was kind of slowly removed from the group because you're avoided. When people feel awkward around you, they just avoid you. But throughout the rest of high school, kids would start coming up one-on-one. They're like, "Hey, can you not tell anyone? But I'm going through this. Can you pray for me? Is that a thing? Is that a thing you do?" "Yes, I'll pray for you." Publicly, I was looked down upon. Privately, I was looked up to. Real interesting. Be changed. When you wrestle with God, be ready because he will call on you. Be changed. Be changed. Don't go back to the way you were, but be changed. Love it. I love Jacob. You can't go till you bless me. You can't go till you bless me. And C, lastly, be ready. The more time you spend with God, the more he will ask and speak to you about. The more you'll understand about your purpose on this life. And then by understanding your purpose, you'll have no excuse for living out a life ordained by God. Be ready. Be ready. Be alone. Be changed and be ready. I love Jacob's life. He was all of these things sitting in the middle of nowhere. You actually find out that location didn't even have a name. It was literally the middle of nowhere. No one had even named it. It was such isolated, so alone. I think that symbolically can represent us when we're going from here to there. It's an aloneness that we wrestle with God in. God, speak to me. God, speak. You can't go. I won't let you leave this place till you bless me. I won't let you leave. Let's pray. Lord, I absolutely love the story of Jacob becoming Israel. It's so unique how this one man's name became a nation. When you talk about Israel, Lord, when we see Israel on the news, when we see Israel in conversations or written down, it's a location, it's a people group, it's a identifiable on a map. But that's only possible because Jacob spent time wrestling with you. Literally a conjunction comma in his life. Lord, I pray that we'd be drawn to have some similar experience with you. That we'd put aside time to be alone, to spend time with you, for you to minister to us. That we wouldn't be satisfied with a 5-minute devotional, but we'd be satisfied only when you've spoken to us. Continue to refine our purpose and refine our calling. Continue to speak over us and speak to us and speak through us, God, because we're here to bless others and not just to greedily steal inheritances, but to give life. In your mighty name, amen.